The Off-Kilter Quilt, Part 2. Well, that was different, Melissa thought as she walked toward the community center. While she felt fairly sure she wasn't going to fall in love with Jim Burke, she could see developing a fondness for him, which wasn't usually the case with her mother's attempted fix-ups. But Jim, well, she felt like she wanted to help him. She wanted to be his friend. Melissa laughed, remembering that Jim already had a friend, one whom he was planning to spend the weekend with. A weekend at a seminary, she reminded herself. Talk about your wild times. As she made her way down Cottage Street, Melissa passed homes so familiar that she no longer saw them unless she forced herself to look. Sometimes she imagined what it would be like to live in one of the newly sprouted subdivisions on the outskirts of Milton Falls, with their broad streets and history-free houses. She'd grown up in a Cape Cod on Cottage Street and now lived two blocks away in a Craftsman bungalow. No one she knew lived in a house that was less than 50 years old. Good thing she liked old houses, Melissa supposed, as she passed a sagging Victorian guarded by an ancient oak. Besides, the suburbs lacked sidewalks, and she was a walker who preferred to stay off the road. She wondered where Jim Burke lived, and then shook her head. No wondering about Jim Burke. Yes, he was nice and attractive and had what sounded like a very interesting collection of quilts. But even if you took his friend out of the equation, what about the khakis and the Oxford striped shirt? Who could get swept off her feet by an accountant who dressed like, well, an accountant? Most of her students had already gathered when Melissa reached her classroom in the community center and were busy at work on their Lady of the Lake blocks, which they'd started the week before. Melissa was setting up her sewing station at the front of the room when Faye, one of her favorite students, walked in with a man Melissa had never seen before. "This is my nephew Jordan," Faye explained when she reached Melissa's table. "And he's hoping he can join us tonight. He's an architect. A very accomplished architect, I might add." Jordan smiled. "Aunt Faye is my biggest fan, which is interesting since I don't think she's ever seen a single one of my designs." "I don't need to see them to know you're brilliant," Faye insisted. "Are you a quilter as well as an architect?" Melissa asked. "I can see how there might be parallels between the two." "I've never sewn a day in my life," Jordan admitted. "But my firm is assisting with the Milton Falls Heights construction project this summer, and this class sounded like a great way to unwind. Making quilts is just a different sort of building project, right?" "But one that's less likely to collapse on you if you make a mistake," Melissa said. "Well, find yourself a seat and make yourself at home. Faye can get you started." Melissa had hoped she might get a little sewing done herself tonight. The Lady of the Lake was a fairly easy block to make, just a center square surrounded by half-square triangles, and they'd practiced their half-square triangle skills last week. But several of her students still needed help, so by the time Melissa finally sat down in front of her own machine, she was surprised to see it was 8:15, time for a break. "I brought cookies if anyone wants one," Caitlin, one of the class's teenage quilters, announced, and then added, with typical self-deprecation, "They're okay, but not great." While the class surrounded the cookie platter, Melissa checked her phone. There was a text from Ruth with some thoughts about a quilt she wanted Melissa to make for her, and three from her mother regarding Jim Burke. "He's very attractive, if you ask me," Mrs. Bennett had written in her first text. "And not at all superficial," she'd observed in the second. "I wouldn't worry about his friend," the third text advised. "Friend doesn't have to mean girlfriend, you know." "But it probably does," Melissa thought. "And besides, he was an accountant. and a little odd to boot. She looked across the room to where Jordan was sitting next to his aunt. Now he seemed like a perfectly nice and normal guy, she thought. Maybe a little on the young side, but attractive and... Melissa shook her head. She was being silly. Who had the time? Still, she had to admit she felt a twitch of excitement when she saw Jordan walking across the room in her direction. "I come bearing gifts," he said when he reached her, offering her two cookies wrapped in a napkin. "They're good." "Thanks," Melissa said, taking the napkin from him. "How do you like quilt making so far?" "I'm still learning how to sew a straight line, which is a little humbling for a man who draws straight lines all day, but I'll get there." "You will," Melissa agreed. "And once you do, and then master the quarter-inch seam, the rest is gravy." "Listen, would you mind if I came again on Thursday?" Jordan asked. "It seems like a great class, and with my fiancé living in Columbus, I have absolutely zero social life right now." Melissa felt her face redden, as though Jordan knew that only moments ago she'd been sizing him up. "Is your fiancé an architect, too?" "City planner," Jordan said. "She's working on a big affordable housing project this summer, so she doesn't have time to visit during the week." Melissa suddenly thought of Casey and her mother. Was it possible they were eligible for affordable housing? Or did you have to have a job? "I understand if you're not taking newcomers," Jordan said. "It's just that this is a lot of fun." "Oh, sorry. I was thinking about a girl I know who needs a place to live," Melissa said. "I don't know if she and her mother are candidates for affordable housing, though. I suppose you're not the person to talk to about that." "Probably not, but I'd be glad to ask around. There's some affordable housing attached to Milton Falls Heights, but I'm pretty sure who gets to live there is up to the housing authority." "Of course," Melissa said. "And of course you're welcome to keep coming to this class. It's my job to lure as many people into the cult of quilting as I can. Speaking of which, time to get back to it. Thanks for the cookies." "Thanks for the class," Jordan replied. "You're a great teacher." "Yes, I am," Melissa thought as she stood to call the class back to order. "And great teachers don't have time for romance." "Okay, everybody," she began just as her phone pinged. She glanced at the screen, wondering what her mother wanted now. But the text wasn't from her mother. "Jim here," she read. "Great to meet you tonight. Let's talk again soon." "Someone needs to teach this guy about emojis," Melissa thought. His text had the same flat effect as his speech. "Okay, guys, let's get going again," she called to the class before picking up her phone to hit reply. "Nice to meet you too, Jim. Hope you have a great visit with your friend." She hit send and then felt oddly guilty, perhaps because in her mind the word "friend" was in quotation marks, making it a sarcastic jab that Jim didn't deserve. "Good thing that he can't read your mind," Melissa thought, venturing out among her students and their sewing machines. Good thing that she wasn't the least bit interested in Jim Burke. Thursday morning, Melissa woke up early so she could have a long, leisurely spell on the front porch with her coffee and a book before work. She had toddler time at 11, and while she loved her rambunctious little pre-literates, the very thought of them could tire her out. Best to start the day with an hour of quiet, punctuated only by birdsong and the occasional squirrel dispute. "Are you coming, Simon?" Melissa called to her cat, who apparently was not. She pushed open the screen door with her shoulder, careful not to spill her coffee, and breathed in the sweet smells of summer drifting from her neighbor's gardens. Roses, rosemary and thyme, honeysuckle. She sat down in her white rocking chair, set her coffee on the table beside it, and opened her book, A Detective Gamache Mystery. She loved that these books were as much about the characters as about whodunit. Melissa liked a good plot as much as the next person, but if she didn't care about a novel's characters, she couldn't make herself read to the end. It was mid-afternoon and Gamache was watching a bee scramble around a particularly pink rose when a movement caught his attention, Melissa read, taking a sip of coffee and nearly sighing with contentment. He turned in his chaise lounge and watched as, "Miss Melissa?" Melissa jumped at the sound of Casey Rawlings' voice and turned to see her standing at the steps of the porch, a hoe in her hand.
"I was weeding your tomato beds out back," Casey continued, "and you should know the squirrels are eating a lot of the half-ripe ones. You might want to cage up your plants. That's what Grandpop always did. Or else spray 'em with wolf pee. My Uncle Wilson in Toledo said that worked for him. You've got to get it online, though."
"Casey, what in the world? Wait, wolf pee?"
"Wolves are predators. The smell of their pee scares the squirrels away. You also need to prune some of the branches. They're getting overgrown."
Melissa moved from her rocking chair to the porch's top step. Taking a seat, she patted the spot next to her. "Sit down, Casey. You sure know a lot about tomatoes. To be honest, my father planted those. I'm not a very good gardener."
"I could tell," Casey said, sitting down next to Melissa. "No offense or anything."
"None taken. But may I ask exactly why you were out back weeding my tomatoes?" Reddening, Casey shrugged.
"I figured if I'm going to use your address, I should help out a little around here."
"I see," said Melissa, nodding. "You know you don't have to, right? I'm very happy to lend you my address without you having to earn it."
"I know," Casey said, "but the fact is, you really could use the help. And I know all about gardening from Grandpop."
"Does your mom know where you are? Is she okay with you coming over here?" Another shrug.
"Sure. I mean, she knows that I'll be at the library most of the day. I don't think she cares what I do on my way over there."
"I bet she does care," Melissa said, wondering if this was true. "So, why don't you let her know that some mornings you might stop by my house to help me with my tomatoes? That way she'll have a good idea of where you'll be if she needs to find you."
"She won't, but okay," Casey said.
She stood up.
"I better get back to those tomatoes. You can get cages at Home Depot if you want. Or you can go to the garden supply store over on East Main and buy chicken wire. If you do that, I'll build some cages for you."
Melissa watched as the girl walked around the corner of the house before she stood and stretched and then went to collect her now cool coffee. So much for spending an hour reading on the porch. She felt too scattered to read now, and besides, how could she read with a 10-year-old laboring in her backyard? She supposed she had things to do herself, clean the kitchen, fold the rest of the laundry, and she needed to make a sandwich to take for lunch. She had turkey, she was pretty sure, and a nice avocado and some good bread. Should she make a lunch for Casey, too? Well, the girl was weeding her garden. The least Melissa could do was feed her. But what if Casey then felt like she needed to repay Melissa for lunch? She'd end up painting the house. Melissa had just begun to gather up her things when a voice called to her from the sidewalk. "Good morning." Turning, she saw Jim Burke, a paper bag in his hand. Is this a bad time?" he asked, walking toward the house.
That is, if you accept the premise that time can be good or bad. Time's just a unit of measurement, if you think about it. Completely neutral. He reached the porch. Hi, he said again. It's nice to see you. Melissa felt a bit breathless. Nice to see you, too. Maybe a little surprising to see you, but nice all the same. Here's the thing, Jim said, apparently done with small talk. I'm on my way out of town, but I'd really like you to take a look at this quilt. I thought maybe it could stay with you for a few days while I'm gone. You want me to spend a little time with it? Get to know it better? Exactly, Jim said. So, would you like to see it? Melissa nodded, and Jim carefully pulled the quilt from the bag and then hung it on the porch railing. She stood to take a closer look. It was a log cabin quilt, its blocks a riot of reds, blues, pinks, and browns. Do you mind if I touch it? She asked, and when Jim held out his hand as if to say, be my guest, she ran her hand over the fabric. Polyester, maybe some cotton blends, so most likely a World War II quilt. The log cabin blocks were inexpertly pieced, and many of the strips used to make the blocks were curved, creating the illusion of movement. Along with the polyester, the quilter had used crepe and corduroy, giving the quilt a marvelous texture. Melissa took a few steps back so she could admire the quilt more fully. How had Jim known that this was exactly the sort of quilt she was interested in? Well, he couldn't know that, obviously. They'd spent a total of, 30 minutes together? It was a lucky guess on his part, or else he just happened to have similar taste to hers, an interest in the funky and offbeat, the not quite regular. Or maybe he was just weird. I love it, she said, reluctantly turning away from the quilt. It's really remarkable. I think it looks cool. Casey had returned from the backyard, her face streaked with dirt. If I ever made a quilt, that's the kind of quilt I'd want to make. Is it okay if I turn on the hose out back? Of course, Melissa said. Just don't forget to turn it off again, please. Casey's eyes widened. I would never forget that, she said, as though mortally offended, and then she was off again to the backyard. Your daughter? Jim asked. No, my gardener, Melissa said. She just volunteered for the position this morning. She's also one of my most loyal library patrons. Ah, I've heard of librarians like you. You get the kids hooked on books, and then you make them weed your flower beds. Yeah, we're a dastardly bunch, Melissa said. Although with Casey, it's more complicated. I let her use my address for her library card, and now I'm afraid she thinks she owes me something. Why doesn't she use her own address? She doesn't have one. She and her mom are in and out of shelters. She was using her grandfather's address, but he just passed away, and she wouldn't think of checking out books under false pretenses. So she's trying to pay you back for your good deed, Jim concluded. Or else she likes thinking of this address as being hers in some way. Maybe she doesn't live here, but she can feel a little ownership by helping out. Melissa sat down in her rocking chair and considered this. That worries me a little. I mean, she's more than welcome here, and goodness knows my tomatoes could use the attention. But she's got a mother. She's got family. It's not like she's been abandoned. There are a lot of ways to be abandoned. Physical abandonment is just the tip of the iceberg. Yeah, I guess. Give it a few days, Jim advised. Things have a funny way of working out, or not. In the meantime, you have the tomatoes to look forward to. Melissa couldn't help but smile. Thanks, Jim. I feel much better now. Jim tipped an imaginary hat. You are more than welcome, he said, and then he was down the porch steps and back on the front walk. Get to know that quilt a little bit, would you? I look forward to a full report. With that, he jogged off, waving at Melissa without actually looking back. Melissa carefully lifted the quilt from the porch railing and folded it. What a strange morning this had been, with one expected visitor after another. Her life seemed to be racking up complications. A little girl she didn't know how to help, and a grown man with a quilt obsession and an unclear agenda. Melissa didn't like complications. She liked things to be straightforward, clearly laid out, and understandable. What she needed to do was call Jordan, the architect, and see what he'd found out about affordable housing for Casey and her mom. She needed to tell Casey she should be playing at the park, not working in Melissa's backyard, and she was going to give Jim's quilt a good look over right this minute and get it back to him before he left town. She took a step toward the house. Suddenly, the scent of lavender enveloped her. Burying her nose in the fabric, Melissa found herself in Provence, in June, the sun lifting into a periwinkle sky, waves of undulating purple fields. Goodness! Melissa lifted her head and looked around. What on earth had just happened? She wasn't sure, but maybe she should hold on to this quilt for a little while longer. Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.